All right. Hello, everyone. Happy Monday. We are here to continue looking at the seven steps to awakening, beginning with number 156. I left off last night on 155. So we'll begin with 156 today. What I'm going to do is just begin with a moment of silence. So if y'all would join me with that, I would appreciate it. All right, here we go. Amen. All right, let me give you a link to number 156 in the journal. There you are. And I'm going to begin by reading from the Seven Steps to Awakening, number 156. And again, the quotes we're reading right now come from Step 1. And they're specifically from another book called The Supreme Yoga. By the way, for Deb, no, you're still here, Deb. I thought you said you were going to the radio. For Deb and anybody on the radio, I was going to say, but I see you're in the room. Yeah, you came back. Yeah, for anybody on the radio, if you want to follow along in the journal, you want to go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. Again, the address is RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. On the menu bar, click on Step 1, and then find the set of numbers that will allow you to find your way to 156, because that's where we're starting. I'm going to read from the book, quote number 156. The truth, or existence, consciousness, bliss, absolute. It's another word for truth. Did you catch that? Existence, consciousness, bliss, absolute is beyond thought and understanding. It is supreme peace and omnipresent. It transcends imagination and description. Again, that quote is originally from the Supreme Yoga. And I will read it one more time. The truth, or existence, consciousness, bliss, absolute, is beyond thought and understanding. It is supreme peace and omnipresent. It transcends imagination and description. All right, let's look at the journal. The journal says, awakening is unspeakable. It is called awakening because it is a complete change in perspective, in knowing, from the perspective of illusion and false I. False I would like to say, I understand the teachings. I get it. I am that. It is done. However, without a change in perspective that defies the false eye's imagination, this speaking is only delay. Do not stop short. Continue to follow inner wisdom guidance. trust it, follow it, be happy now. Wow. Those last four sentences, you could call, are the center of my current philosophy of living. My current philosophy of living. At one time for me, there was a lot of thought about awakening. Awakening seemed to be a goal that needed to be achieved. You know, it's funny. I went to India, you know, with a thought or a hope that maybe I would awaken there. And instead, what seems to have happened was the goal died. I don't know how else to say that. The goal of awakening died. that's what happened. And as a result, I have this, you know, current living philosophy, you know, that's really captured in those last four sentences, beginning with continue to follow inner wisdom guidance. I feel that I have clearly been led pretty much since making the decision, the conscious decision to begin the spiritual path. There was also some leading before that that I can see, but it's exceptionally clear since making the decision to be on the spiritual path. And you know, if you look at my Facebook page, what you'll see on my Facebook page is what they call the banner, is you'll see my foot walking. It's actually on the mountain path on Arunachala, but you'll notice that my foot is on a particular stone. And of course, after that, there'll be another stone, and after that, another stone. And, you know, I feel like my stones are being very clearly laid out. And I feel like I've always been led one stepping stone at a time, and that my job is just to continue following those stepping stones without some future thought of awakening. Just be here now on this stone. So continue to follow inner wisdom guidance. Trust it. I think I just described maybe in my words that I do trust that completely. There's no angst about where I am. I know that there have been other times when I have felt maybe where I am is not good enough, that I should be ahead of this in some way. And I know other people feel that way or have felt that way. But that feeling in me is not here anymore. It's dead. There's an absolute trust of where I am. So continue to follow inner wisdom guidance. Trust it, follow it. And then the last part, be happy now. I think I talked about that quite a bit last night. Be happy now. I said I've never heard a rule that says we have to awaken to be happy. I don't know where we get that idea. It seems that what I really feel is that my current function, to use a word from A Course in Miracles, my current function is to be right here now, happily. That's my job, to be right here now, happily. And I know that there's a teaching out there which I'm sure has usefulness, but I know it can also create pressure, a sense of pressure, depending on how it's heard. You know, and the teaching is, you know, you are that. What you're looking for is what you are. You need to just stop looking and you know, you'll realize what you are. And when the mind hears these teachings, the mind wants to claim it. The mind wants to claim it. The mind hears it's here to be claimed, and the mind wants to claim it. And obviously the mind can't. So that's something that can be watched for, that if the The mind is listening to these teachings and the mind is trying to claim it. We can actually, you know, the image that's in my mind now is step back from the mind into the heart. And the heart is the one that's just being happy now. Just being happy now. Yeah, so awakening is unspeakable. It is called awakening because it is a complete change in perspective, in knowing, from the perspective of illusion and false eye. False eye would like to say, okay, would like to say, I understand the teachings. I get it. I am that. It is done. However, without a change in perspective that defies the false eye's imagination, this speaking is only delay. Do not stop short. Continue to follow inner wisdom guidance. Trust it. Follow it. Be happy now. Boom. All right, so we can scroll down. And on the left, click on number 157. And I'm going to read number 157 from the book first. This is a little longer, so you may have to, as the lady in Romper Room used to say, put on your listening ears. Sometimes when it's a little longer, it's a little easier to get lost in the words. Okay, so here we go. When non-dual being is known, the duality vanishes instantly. Belief, or imagination, gave rise to diversity. When that belief is dropped, diversity goes. Thought, imagination, or belief gives rise to sorrow. To abandon such thinking is not painful. It is feeding these thoughts and beliefs that has brought about this sorrow. And this comes to an end by not entertaining those thoughts and beliefs. All right, so since that one's a little long, I think I'll just go right straight to the journal. How's that sound? So the journal, believe it or not, in this case is much shorter. The journal says, as long as I can identify a single person, a single insect, or a single inanimate object as different from me, awakening to oneness has not occurred. If awakening to oneness has not occurred, it is best to follow the guidance that leads to awakening. Again, you know, if we look back at this very long quote from the Supreme Yoga, it says, when non-dual being is known, the duality vanishes instantly. So, as long as I can identify a single person, a single insect, or a single inanimate object as different from me, then there hasn't been awakening to oneness, which is non-duality. I perceive this as a very simple test. The mind really does want us to think that we are, quote, enlightened, when it's not true. Because if we can think that we are enlightened when it's not true, we will stop the movement, stop the following of guidance that is actually taking us there. We'll stop following the path. So it's nice to have these simple, simple tests, you know. You know, A Course in Miracles says something similar. It doesn't go into the insect and the inanimate object, but it talks about how, you cannot leave a single brother outside of your circle of atonement. That same idea. You know, if there's anyone that annoys me or frustrates me in the slightest, well, then I have not accepted the atonement yet. That's what that means. If I can identify a single person, a single insect, or a single inanimate object as different from me, you know, if I see this red cup of water as different from me, or the ice in the water as different from me, then I have not awakened to oneness or non-duality. And if I haven't, then the best thing to do is just to keep following that guidance, following that mountain path that's leading me there. Because that guidance is leading me away from the belief, the thought, the imagination that gives rise to the illusion or gives rise to sorrow, as the Supreme Yoga said. That's what this guidance is doing. It's leading me away from my habitual ways of thinking. And it's my habitual ways of thinking that create the duality. So as long as I can identify a single person, a single insect, or a single inanimate object is different from me, awakening to oneness has not occurred. If awakening to oneness has not occurred, it is best to follow the guidance that leads to awakening. And you can scroll down and on the left, click on number 158. I'll read number 158 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. It says, all thoughts and beliefs lead to sorrow, whereas no thought and no belief are pure bliss. Therefore, with the help of the fire of wisdom, vaporize the waters of your beliefs and become peaceful, supremely blissful. Behold, the one infinite consciousness. That's kind of a fun, colorful quote, especially coming from the Supreme Yoga, which is a little more black and white most of the time. Let's read this one again. All thoughts and beliefs lead to sorrow, whereas no thought and no belief are pure bliss. Therefore, with the help of the fire of wisdom, with the help of the fire of wisdom, we call that Holy Spirit in the language of A Course in Miracles, with the help of the fire of wisdom, vaporize the waters of your beliefs and become peaceful, supremely blissful. Behold the one infinite consciousness. All right, let's look at number 158 in the journal. It's a little longer. It just says, inward, inward, inward. The outer world and outer teachings have a role to play. Their role is to keep you fascinated, seeking outwardly. However, every outer road has the same ending. And that is ending itself. Now, I don't want to be misinterpreted here. So I'll just be clear that, again, this journal is my personal journal. This is my personal guidance. And some of you know that this year, my personal guidance is not to seek any teachings outside of myself. It doesn't mean that I've never used teachings outside of myself. I began with A Course in Miracles. Of course, it was my inner self that led me through A Course in Miracles and gave me clarity, but A Course in Miracles was still used. After that, I did go to significant inner teachings, NTI, the messages that came while I was with Laurent, the teachings of Inner Ramana. Those were all inner teachings. And then I went back to a year of outer teachings. I was looking at people like Jan Fraser, Muji, Byron Katie. Of course, Eckhart Tolle has been used. But what my inner self is telling me is that there's a part of the mind, and we call this ego. There's a part of the mind that has this hopeful attachment to outer teachings. There's a hopeful attachment to outer teachings, and the hopeful attachment is that the key is actually out there somewhere, and that someone like a Muji or a David Hoffmeister, or a Byron Katie, they have the key that will open the lock in me. And what my inner guidance is telling me is that is just not where the awakening is going to happen, at least here for me. The awakening is not going to happen through some seemingly outside source. It's only going to happen for me by going deep and deep and deep within. The key is in. So when this is speaking, number 158, this is speaking to me. I do not want to be misinterpreted as saying this is guidance for everyone. Some people do appear to find the key in what we would call a guru or a teacher. But I have just been told that that's not my path. I'm to go in, as far in as I can go. So inward. The outer world and outer teachings have a role to play. Their role is to keep you fascinated, seeking outwardly. However, every outer road has the same ending, and that is ending itself. Inward. Inner stillness and inner guidance also have a role to play. Their role is to draw you home to yourself, where there is nothing artificial, and so there is no end. Listen inwardly. Follow the guidance of inwardly. Spend a lot of time alone. And that's what I'm doing this year. Spend a lot of time alone so that the voice of inwardly becomes clear and the center of focus. Likewise, do not spend time in outer activities unless it is so guided by inner wisdom. And then stay tuned inwardly. You know, I do have people in my life. And you'll notice the date on this, by the way, is January 26th. So this was still in the first month of the year. And what was happening in my mind in the first month of this new year of silence was that my mind was saying things like, I have to spend time with my friends who are here in Pueblo. You know, that. Literally, my mind was telling me, you know, they moved here for you. You have to spend time with them. And if I listened to my mind, I would be making sure that I have quality time with Donna, quality time with Ruby, quality time with Jill, quality time with Kathy, quality time with Tom and Jacqueline, quality time with Len, and then of course there's quality time with Danielle, and quality time with Jasmine. I guess the question is, if I was to listen to that, when would this alone time happen? It wouldn't. And yet my mind was trying to tell me, you know, they moved here for you, you have to do this, you have to spend time with them. But the guidance is to spend time alone. Now, that doesn't mean I don't ever see them. I do somewhat, but, you know, it's not a lot. So you can see here that this is very specific guidance for Regina Dawn Akers, we could say, on January 26, 2012. Follow the guidance of inwardly. Spend a lot of time alone so that the voice of inwardly becomes clear and the center of focus. Likewise, do not spend time in outer activities unless it is so guided by inner wisdom. And then, while you're in those outer activities, stay tuned inwardly. So that is number 158. That is, with the help of the fire of wisdom, vaporizing the waters of my beliefs. That's what's happening in my alone time. All right, let's scroll down and look at... click on number 159. I think we've had a couple new people in the room, so I will definitely be sure to post the link in the room for you. Okay, and first I will read 159 from The Seven Steps to Awakening, and here it is. Objectification, or conceptualization, leads to capital S self-forgetfulness, right? Capital S self-forgetfulness. Objectification, or conceptualization, leads to self-forgetfulness. And Deb, I see you have written something here. Did you hear what Veronica said, which was Holy Spirit instructing me, don't speak unless spoken through? No, I didn't hear that. But if you heard that as guidance for you, I'm happy. I'm always happy when people receive guidance, when they feel they hear guidance. I'm always happy to hear that. So objectification or conceptualization leads to self-forgetfulness. Let's go to number 159. Thought takes an idea and turns it into an object to be thought about. In this way, even thought is form. Now, I don't know how you all have progressed on this spiritual path, but when I began, I thought of form as things you could say the body and outside of the body. Of course, the organs would have been form, but for the most part, form was material. You can touch it in some way, like you can touch your spleen if you take it out. So things that you can touch. And formless was things you could not touch. And so I thought of thoughts as formless. But what has happened is I have come to see objects differently, form differently. I've come to see objects as, anything that I can see. I'll put it that way. And I don't mean see with my eyes. I mean see with my mind. Anything that I can see is an object. And hold on, Jamie wants to go outside. Come on, my love. So if the idea I need to spend quality time with, every person who has moved to Pueblo, if that idea shows up in the mind, that is something I can see. I can see that. Therefore, it is an object or form. And the mind can then become very, very focused on an object. In fact, if I, had fallen for this, if I had believed this thought that somehow it's my function to spend time, quality time, each week with all of the people who have moved to Pueblo, well, then I would be straining my brain to figure out every week what to do with Jill, what to do with Ruby, what to do with Donna, what to do with Kathy, what to do with Jacqueline and Tom. Should I always be with Jacqueline and Tom together? Sometimes should I do something just with Tom? Sometimes just with Jacqueline? When to fit Lynn in there and how to spend time with her? The mind would really spend a lot of time focusing on that. So you can tell that thought is actually, although it seems formless, it's actually quite hard, quite hard. It can capture a lot of our attention. It can result in, like anxiety, right? So thought takes an idea and turns it into an object to be thought about. In this way, even thought is form. A mind occupied by form is not aware of formlessness. In fact, I need to capitalize that I there. Maybe someday I'll remember and I'll go do that. In fact, to a mind occupied with form, formlessness is a mirage. Hypnotized by thought as object, truth becomes mirage, and mirage becomes truth. So if I am now in this project of trying to spend time quality time every week with each person who has moved to Pueblo, and still somehow squeeze in some silent time for me too, because I knew I had that guidance, right? When my mind is so occupied by trying to figure out this puzzle that I've created for myself and trying to figure out how to do it, I am so out of touch with the natural peace, joy, the natural non-attached beingness that I am. There's no way I can be all tangled up in that problem of how to spend time with everyone and be that natural bliss simultaneously. And in fact, the deeper I go into the problem, the further I am from that natural bliss, to where the natural bliss becomes at best a distant memory of how I used to feel back when I used to follow guidance. and it may seem like it actually never happened anyway. I mean, the word mirage, I think, is a good word. It seems like, you know, that just can't be, just this natural, peaceful joy, happiness, bliss can't be, because there's so many things that have to be figured out and worked out, right? So a mind occupied by form is not aware of formlessness. In fact, to a mind occupied with form, formlessness is a mirage. Hypnotized by thought as object, truth becomes mirage, and mirage becomes truth. Now my problem, my anxiety, my having to work everything out, that seems like my reality. Notice the hypnotic trance of mind focused on object. Feel, realize. That's referring to an intuitive realization. Feel, realize that this is hypnosis. I'm hypnotized by this problem. I'm hypnotized by, you know, trying to figure it out so it's no longer a part of my life, so that everything fits together, right? Feel, realize that this is hypnosis. Desire from the heart to be free of this self-imposed delusion. Now, I did not fall for that self-imposed delusion that I needed to spend time with everyone. So I never went down that road of trying to figure out how to do that. But there was a thought a few years ago that I fell for. I guess I fell for it a long time ago, but I kind of re-fell for it a few years ago. The thought is that I have to work hard for my money. Like, if there's money coming in and I'm not working really, really hard for it, like busting my butt hard, that somehow I'm guilty and I don't deserve the money. And I do receive money. So what happened somehow is, because this thought was believed, I got involved in, you know, so many things that I couldn't even begin to tell you. I could go back and look it up, but I couldn't sit here and tell you what all I was doing with my day. But there were just so many things that I got to the point that I would get out of bed at 5 a.m, come down here, start working, and I was working until I couldn't hold my head up at night. And this was going on pretty much 7 days a week. You know, I mean, obviously a little bit we went out and had fun, but even that was beginning to seem like work, like I had to fit the fun in. And what I was losing, what had really left me completely, was alone time. Time sitting alone, you know, in contemplation, meditation. That was almost gone because there just wasn't time for it. There was too much work that had to be done. And it was last April, during a study with the scribe, that I suddenly realized that my busyness was a form of resistance. I mean, it appeared I was being very helpful to a lot of people, right? But it was really a form of resistance. It was taking me away from where I needed to be, that inward, inward, inward. But at that time, when I realized that I had become too busy out of resistance, I looked at the things that I had on my plate, I couldn't see anything that didn't need to be done. It's not like I could say, okay, well, I'll just quit doing this and quit doing this and quit doing this. Everything seemed committed to and everything had to be done. So all that I could do was give my willingness to not be as busy. That was all I could do at that point. And that's what this line reminds me of. Desire from the heart to be free of this self-imposed delusion. I gave my willingness not to be so busy. And then what began to happen over the next few months is there were things that began to drop away. Some things were actually, you know, people would show up and say, hey, you know, I'll take this, and I would give it to them. The funny thing is, a lot of those things I gave to other people have never even been done. But the fact that I gave it to other people relieved me of the self-imposed commitment. Obviously, life's, you know, getting along fun with it, you know, fine without it being done. So it kind of disappeared. But just through a lot of things showing up, the busyness lessened. And then the guidance came to have this, you know, year of increased silence. And I'm spending, you know, 2 or 3 hours a morning now back in alone time, which is something I haven't done in a few years. And it's proving very, very valuable. I'm still busy when I'm not in my alone time. There's still enough filling up that other space. But last year, with everything I had put on my plate, there wouldn't have been time for the 2 or 3 hours a day, and now there is. So notice the hypnotic trance of mind focused on an object. Feel, realize that this is hypnosis, whatever problem you're focused on. Desire from the heart to be free of this self-imposed delusion, and then return home to the recognized realness of the heart. So again, we may think that our problems have to be thought about. Like I thought that all of that work had to be done. All of those commitments had to be kept. All those people needed to be helped. But it's not true. We're the ones making up these rules for ourselves. And so if we just notice that, you know, we're focused on a problem too much, we're giving too much energy to this problem, or that we're overextended in our lives, somehow we're not giving the time that we know we should be giving to our silence, then just give willingness to be free of this self-imposed delusion. Give willingness to be free of this thought that seems so important to be thought about, this problem. And then let intuition, guidance, and, you know, synchronistic coincidences take care of everything for you. Let's see. what I think we'll do now is just scroll down and click on number 160. Just kind of as a summary of that last little discussion, 159, I'm going to read the quote from the book again. The quote was, objectification, such as the, you know, the objects in my job, right, all the tasks that had to be done, objectification or conceptualization, such as these, this idea that I have to spend time with everyone, you know, anything like that leads to self-forgetfulness. That's why I called it resistance or distraction. It leads to self-forgetfulness. Anything that occupies our anything that occupies our time and mind away from God, away from awakening. All right, so I'm going to read number 160 in the book. It is absolute truth and therefore not truth as a concept. Okay, again, the Supreme Yoga says, it is absolute truth and therefore not truth as a concept. All right, number 160, this is what I wrote. Imitation is not the real thing. The attempt to describe is not that which is described. Imagination is not direct experience. Do not settle for imitation, description, or imagination. Be present for the real thing. Now, there's probably a couple of things happening right now. By right now, I just mean, you know, in the world. One thing that appears to be happening is that there appear to be people who are awakening, having sudden shifts that we would call awakening. And at the same time, there appear to be people who are falling for the idea of enlightenment without truly being awakened. And both maybe are happening in greater numbers than ever before. Maybe. I don't know that for a fact, but you know, that's what people say, and it's possible. You know, it just seems like both are happening a lot. And so with both, you know, awakening happening and falling for the idea of false enlightenment, the idea of enlightenment, falling for the idea of enlightenment is happening. Well, then what each one wants to do is make sure, of course, they don't fall for the idea of enlightenment. You know, our friend Nook Sanchez fell for the idea of enlightenment once. And she spent some time thinking she was enlightened. And then she woke up to the fact that she wasn't. And she told me that the way she woke up to the fact that she wasn't is that she got in a fight with her mom. And she was alert enough to know that if she was enlightened, she shouldn't have gotten to that argument with her mom. But I was really happy to have a friend who had fallen for this idea of enlightenment and then woke up, because then I was able to ask her, well, how can I not make the same mistake? And she said, if you don't want to, you won't. And I understood what she meant by that. At least this is what I understood. The thought in my mind was that if I want enlightenment, if enlightenment is a goal, if I'm seeking enlightenment, then I might fall for the idea of enlightenment because I want it so bad. And I'm going to leave you with that for a second and let Jamie in. But if I don't have this craving, it's funny because words really suck, but you guys know that, so we're okay here. If I don't have that craving for enlightenment, if I don't want to be the enlightened person, let's say, if that's just not in me at all, then I'm not going to fall for that idea because it doesn't interest me. Now, at the same time, you know, you'll hear me say, you know, awakening should be our purpose and awakening should always be up front. But that's a little different. That's a little different because that's using the lens of purpose to interpret everything that's happening right now. That's not about a future goal. You're like, I just left to let Jamie in. Well, let's imagine that my mind was trying to tell me, you know, you do that too much, Regina. You get up and let Jamie out. You get up and let Jamie in. I don't know, what would my mind say about that? You know, you're not really that interested in your teaching. you know, Jamie is a manifestation of your lack of interest in your own teaching. You know, that's why she always wants in and out. She's the manifestation of, you know, there's like this guilt thought here. Well, if awakening is my purpose, then awakening is the way I look at those thoughts. I look at the thought through the lens of awakening, and what I see clearly is this thought is just a guilt thought, which means it's an ego thought, which means I don't need to listen to it. I can disregard it and get up and let Jamie in. So when I say that your purpose always needs to be up front, that is different than having the goal, I want to be enlightened. Although they maybe sound very similar. But one is talking about a filter of how I'm always looking at the present moment. The other one is a desire, the same way it's a desire to lose 20 pounds, you know. And then I could be enticed into believing that's true because I wanted it so much. And that's the imitation. That's falling for the idea of enlightenment. That's why number 160 in the book says it is absolute truth and therefore not truth as a concept. It's not the idea of enlightenment. Imitation is not the real thing. The attempt to describe is not that which is described. Imagination is not direct experience. Do not settle for imitation, description, or imagination. Be present for the real thing. Be present is talking about now, right? Be present. All right, let's just scroll down and click on number 161. And I'll go ahead and put the link in the room. Okay, I'm going to read from the book, 161. It's very short. It is pure, absolute consciousness, not else. Just kind of like nothing else, said fancy-like. It is pure, absolute consciousness, not else. All right, let's look at number 161 in the journal. That which is that, and nothing else. Attached to nothing. No idea, no desire, no fear. And you prepare for realization of that which is. So I mentioned that awakening, having the purpose of awakening as the filter for all things, and I used the example of having this guilt story come up about, you know, I shouldn't get up and down and let Jamie, you know, in and out during a teaching. Well, what I find is that filter, that filter of awakening. It's, you know, having that purpose in my mind, it just works so well. You know, like yesterday, the day before yesterday, I checked out a movie from Blockbuster to watch with Jasmine. And I picked the movie out specifically because I thought she might like it, because she doesn't like all the same movies I like. But this had, you know, stars in it that she likes, and it was the kind of story that she likes. And then Jasmine decided she didn't want to watch a movie. And for a moment, there was a little unhappiness. Like, you know, I want to watch this movie, you know, and now you don't want to. We don't have anything else to do. You know? Why can't we just watch the movie? I don't know that it even lasted that long as it took to tell you, but that's how it felt. It was that feeling that those words described. But then what the purpose of awakening does is it sees that immediately, and it sees that I have an attachment to a plan of watching a movie, and it points out immediately that is the cause of my current feeling of unhappiness, and it asks me to release my attachment, and boom, I release it. And I'm right back in happiness, and I'm in the car with Jasmine. What we ended up doing was getting in the car, taking her to Wendy's for a snack, returning the movie. You know, this was all a little driving around. That's what we did with the time instead, was this driving around, this running errands. But my point is, if we are attached to anything in form, which means attached to any thought, attached to any plan, attached to any desire, you know, attached to any fear. We think any fear is meaningful, and therefore we have to do things to avoid that from happening. If we're attached to anything, then that is something on top of that which is. And we only know that causeless happiness when we're being present with that which is and nothing else. So as soon as I decide I want to watch a movie or spend my time a certain way, I've added something else. And that's actually going to result in some type of suffering, some type of unhappiness. So in order to have the present experience of causeless happiness, I need to attach to nothing. No idea, no desire, no fear, right? And then I know, I experience, I realize causeless happiness. So that which is that and nothing else. Attached to nothing. No idea, no desire, no fear. And you prepare for realization of that which is. Now we only have 2 minutes left, so I think I'm not going to go on to number 162. So what should I do for 2 minutes? Let's see what Faye is saying here. Hold on, Faye. Oh, just thank you. I thought you were going to give me an idea, Faye, of what I could do for 2 minutes. Gentle listener, is that I think that's Diana, I think that's who follows me. Is that true? If so, I could just turn the mic over. But I guess, yeah, that's what I thought. Are you ready for the mic? What about boredom? I actually don't get bored anymore. I only had the thought of boredom once. In the last year or so, and that's when I was actually concerned about someone else being bored, and that's when I felt bored. He's like, oh no, and then I felt bored too, but then I caught on to that, and as just a false idea. That's what happens. My mind catches on to these false ideas, and they don't last long. They only last a second, and I see, oh, I'm bored because I'm thinking this. I'm thinking that this person's bored, you know, and I just let it go, and then I'm happy again. So it's always a thought that's causing anything but happiness, every time. And if you have so much empty time, nothing to do, it's probably because you're supposed to be simply being right now. And that's a great blessing, to have the time to just be. So just let go of the thoughts that are in the way of you doing that, all right? And be happy that... that you're being, that God has given you that opportunity to just be. All right, I'm going to let go of the mic. Thank you.